I'm standing, but it's short people level. Okay, yeah, I think that's probably okay. So, hi, thank you guys so much for having this evening. Thank you so much to Hemingway's. Thank you so much to everybody putting it together. Thank you for our amazing authors and editors who are here. Thank you, Michael Albright, for making all of this happen. And yeah, so I'm going to read a poem about getting drunk. If you guys aren't doing that yet, you are wasting time. So, let me see. In theory, I put a little space where that is. There we go. All right. Drinking poem. I'm going to scooch this out of the way because I like to get my hand on this mic. Drinking poem. I was probably drunk. It's amazing more poems don't begin this way. The shot glass O of my mouth against his on the love seat, my bones so small like they were a slatwood raft, a causeway through the dirty punch train. The day before my boyfriend came home from London, I woke up with my pants inside out, a slit-eyed memory of myself in someone's bathroom, fumbling with my tongued pockets. And the day after he said he would leave again, I closed the bar with another man who cupped my knee in his white horse of a car and sucked the air from between our drowned bodies. There's no forgiveness in empty bottles, the silent teeth of blackouts on bourbon and cheap Shiraz. But today I found my landlord's pinwheel flowers had licked up my chain-link fence, and my bell peppers had popped from their starry beginnings into the hardened fetus of fruit. I wonder sometimes if patience turns us hard, like the hulled seeds of pumpkins left to heat. Weight translated to nothing more than the brief pyrotechnics of skin, the sure pop of a button through its hole, the long burn of a cigarette outside my favorite dive. Drawing what I hear. In the coffee shop, the last time I see him, I hear him move me from me. A friend says, I don't know what he'll do. I don't like him anymore. She is talking about her husband. There is a swallow in my throat. Water drips into a pot, steam. My body is shrill, the way the lids lower and brush to him, his hat, his shirt. They make no noise, but they did when I threw them on the bed. Always unmade, always cold and expectant. Though some nights last winter we made it warm, and I heard him say my name, and him saying, wait, no. Then the turning of my body in his hands, the sounds of sheets bunched at the heels, the night he told me about the ex who held him like me. I heard his sink drip into the bathroom and do not rise to stop it. Dishes collapse, the click, click, click of the pilot light and the opening conversation of flame, the near silent way his hand covered mine at the bar that night I met him. The night he said, come in, and I did. And here today, my friend saying he was never this way, or he always was, and I say, come here, and her hair makes a sound across my cheek. I do not hear the closed door of his leaving, his car sat up in the lot. Instead, I remember fingers in his hair that last day I knew him, the way I didn't say his name when he left, the way the air didn't raise its breath to its voice, but it could have been the sound of his voice. It could have been the sound of his voice saying no, and the brush fire in my bones, the low, long crackle. So I know you guys can tell this from my accent, but I'm from South Carolina. Though Western Pennsylvania is my ancestral home. My mother's side of the family is from Oil City in Franklin, so it feels good to be back here every time. So I grew up in South Carolina, and I know you can tell that from all my talking about the dogs and all of those other southern things. So I kept getting, I did my undergrad in upstate New York in Binghamton. Yay, go Bearcats. And I kept getting introduced later as being from Binghamton, which was super weird to me because, like, in the South, like, being introduced as someone from New York was like an insult. So it was very strange. I was like, I'm not sure how to take all of this. So this is called On Being Erroneously Called a New Yorker Again. It's not that I don't want your palette of hill, roughed up autumn color. I would take it all. The stones and the dried Susquehanna, the candy sunsets, and all the slow turns and the dark drives to Ithaca. I would take the closed summer rinks, the children clung on the neck of carousel mares, stretches of surprising cows and corn and barns long sunk into themselves. Take the imploding shoe factory, the starving doors of IBM, the remains of the art theater, its 5 years of ash. I'd take the terrible pink of that retirement home and scrape it to its bergamot beginnings, wash the arena windows until they shone like dimes, dress all the bandages on the heels of you, my city, and lullaby the mounded snow to spring. But I inherited another city. Dimpled palmetto forts, the dignity of the southern dead, songs about cars and cornbread and cast iron. Where I'm from, we do not believe in New York. But still, I'm windy sometimes in her bed, staring into the sad black of a story that is no longer mine. So my partner, Joe, and I, a couple years ago, bought a farm in Knoxville. We are now land barons. It's very exciting. I feel very fancy. Right? Thank you. I appreciate that. So yeah, it is in a holler. Do you guys call it hollers around here? Oh, okay. Yeah, that was something that we questioned on the way up. Yeah, there is still... but once you get to Pennsylvania, do they call them hollows now? Oh, okay. No, oh. It's still?
Well, good for them.
Well, okay. I want to bring Holler back. So, yes. All right. That's a plan. Thank you. Hashtag. So I wanted to write poems about the farm without being like, I'm a douchebag that works at a farm. And so I started writing these poems about this character named Dot who buys a farm and realizes that it is haunted by all of the animals that have been killed there. So I'm going to read some poems about ghost animals. So this one, I get to say the word cock, and it is about roosters. Dot finds the ghost cocks. Also, this is actually based on a true story. Dot finds the ghost cocks. Teresa tells Dot of the crooked barn, how drunk one night a flock of teens tried to tear it down, where once men brought their toothed cocks to rip song from one another. The old woman sold cheese and mayonnaise sandwiches as the night dipped itself in new blood. Dot thinks plumage, the iridescence of wet feather and comb. She almost wants to love the way men once did, how each would foster downy chicks in their plastic tubs, sprinkle them with mealworm and scratch the rusty chain chorus of crow in the newly warm dawn, how birds learn from their own isolation. Dot hears them sometimes towing in the turned leaves. Tonight she wants to see them. Tonight she wants to see them want to live. She swings her legs from the wooden deck. Dot rides the ghost donkey. And for those of you who have been at the farm, you know the bray of the donkey. The bray comes each morning when the sun whips the honeysuckled fences, a sound so strange to Dot that she sits in the cold dawn, waiting, unsure what pain she must heal. This field, long grown in ivy and sapling, does not stir to the noise, though sometimes a wind sweeps up or squirrels break the still in play. Dot doesn't know where it comes from, the breathy giving up at the end, the huff that doesn't move the dry maple leaves, but she follows it between the limbs to a shadow like a cross. She feels the misty breath, the weight of a muscle against her neck, a warmth she used to understand. She sees in the dim new light something that is almost memory. She lifts her body onto it, and the wind slaps her small cheek that is suddenly wet. The Appalachian Sea. Dot doesn't know why she drinks martinis with sashimi. She says it's about the sea, the salt brine of olive, or the simplicity of the long stem, how it holds itself in her inky hand, or more, a hand that learns less metaphor than lamb and hay. Years of cleaning land of its refuse, each sapling like a neatly plucked hair, the cedar spit of pine fires, tires stacked like so many pages. She misses the sea and the Appalachia thick so much she wonders if the waves do taste like olives, how quick driftwood is to burn. She thinks of the line books she used to touch up like she does now, dried walled pocks or rabbit holes she fills with gathered stone, or the how she knows the way chickens will confuse noodle for worm, the exact length of ewe gestation, the tide of night in a wet holler. How she was each day learning the smart crackle of lightning in dark trees, the way something can split so thoroughly from itself that both halves begin to die. And this is my final poem for the night. Thanks. The deer. The deer have been in the garden again, clipping the heart-shaped leaves of the sweet potatoes, popping off each tomato before it bleeds. After the pink sky, the voracious night descends where the raccoons pilfer the composted artichoke, lick clean the alabaster oyster shells, and run fat and fearless across the slats of my deck. It's hard not to be angry at their hunger. The green I've grown from startled seed, the hoof prints in the earth I cultivated as one might for a room for children, little lullabies of pinched weed and water. I watch for the deer with their flashlight eyes to saunter across the lawn into my spread of summer flowers that will bloom into squash, beans, the red heat of pepper. And think of my mother's garden, filled up with inedible gourds, striped like cartoon prison pajamas, that one season of fruiting where she let each rot on the vine, a decoration of perfect hard rinds strung to the chain link like last year's Christmas lights. So much like the apple tree she dug up from our stepfather's lawn 2 months after we left, each spring it would give such small fruit. And I would bite through that puckering skin to taste what she'd stolen for us. Not at all like the muscadines I hoarded in the woods across the street, wild and sweet like the promise of growing up, where the world might have skin too tough to gnaw, but you could learn to pop the slippery juice through, to spit the seeds. I was young then, before I understood our own history of poverty and force, before I remember how cold and hard a man's belt buckle felt on the skin, the way a voice can discolor old photographs, before the night I saw my mother huddled on the floor, my stepfather's hand, the same hand she watched him raise to me, raised like a slow motion sword in a movie, the night I ran from both of them into the woods where the dirt and pine hummed with spindly mosquitoes, a time when I thought deer emerging from the dark was something of ecstasy and wonder. Thank you, guys.